Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I've drummed it into our players that they are privileged to play for you.
Call it second, quickly, Origi! Yeah!
And Mission Impossible is accomplished! It's 7 for Liverpool! Sensational! Astonishing! Incredible!
Du hører på Pausepraten, en podcast fra Liverpool Support Group Norge.
Hei, og velkommen til en ny episode av Pausepraten. Mitt navn Jens Bessesen, og I dag har vi fått med oss David Lynch som gjest. Han en av journalisterne som følger Liverpool FC tettest, og vi har tatt en prat med han om det meste som skjer rundt klubben for tida. Vi begynte med ansettelsen av Richard Hughes som ny sportsdirektør, og så snakket vi om ny manager, eventuelle nye spillere I sommer og skadesituasjonen før resten av sesongen. Vi setter pris på alle spørsmålene som sendt inn av dere lesere og har prøvd å komme inn om de fleste temaene. Så da det bare å ønske David Lynch velkommen. Hi David, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Been a busy morning with all the news breaking. You know, you never quite know when that's going to come. So it's been hectic, but good. It's good when things are happening, and I think this is good news for Liverpool that they're moving forward with putting a structure in place.
And we're talking about Richard Hughes, of course, the new sporting director. What can you tell us about that appointment?
Yeah, I think it's one that it seemed like an open and shut case, didn't it? That it was going to happen once it became apparent that Michael Edwards was coming back to Liverpool, because they've got such a long working relationship and a friendship as well. And but I would say that, you know, as much as he's seen as Edwards' man and they are close to each other, there is, you know, it's a smart appointment as well when you look at some of the details behind it. You know, for example, look at some of the signings Bournemouth have made, the fact that they've consistently punched above the weight in the Premier League since Richard Hughes has been part of recruitment, the smart appointments they've made in terms of managers as well. You know, not just Iriola this summer, but Gary O'Neill was a bit of a surprise appointment when he was made and did a really good job. And so they look like a really smart and well-run club, Bournemouth, that has punched above its weight. And that, you know, as much as there's the link between Edwards and Hughes, I think that more than anything is the reason that Liverpool have appointed him, is because they think he's very, very good at his job and he's got a good track record.
Do you know if he's been on the club's radar before the Michael Edwards returning as well?
I think he's one that they looked at because they do sort of statistical profiling of different executives and also managers we know and players. So I don't think it's purely Michael Edwards driven, but, you know, I suppose their thinking was FSG was always to get in the CEO of football, and that would be someone who would then make this appointment. Now, their dream appointment was always Michael Edwards. So they've managed to get that over the line. And I suppose in that sense, then it was always going to be Richard Hughes, and he will have known that if Michael Edwards was to secure that role, he'd be the man. But you know, like I say, as much as those two are tied together, I still think he would have been on Liverpool's radar, not least actually because Michael Edwards was kind of recommending him to every club in Europe when he's in his role as a consultant at Ludonautics. So I think word will have got out that he would have been a smart appointment. Another one actually who Edwards always recommended to people was Dougie Friedman at Crystal Palace. And I would have no surprise whatsoever if, you know, Michael Edwards or not, whether Liverpool would have looked at both of those people actually as smart appointments, because, you know, their transfer record is a matter of public record, isn't it? Everyone can see that they've done smart business where players have ended up being worth more than they've paid for them and done a good job in terms of keeping Bournemouth in the Premier League. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Hughes would have been on the radar as much as Friedman and any other sporting director who's done good work recently, really.
What kind of deals is he known for doing at Bournemouth?
Yeah, smart deals. I think, you know, very sort of what we call money ball deals, I suppose. I mean, people will say, oh, well, Bournemouth has spent a lot of money and they did have a rich owner who ploughed a lot of money into the club. And that is absolutely fair to say. But the essence of Moneyball, which I think people sometimes miss, is that it's more than just, okay, you know, Wataru Endo is maybe the archetypal example of that in terms of 16 million is quite cheap for a top midfielder. He comes in, he's underrated, he's 30 years old. Nobody expects this from him. But I also say a Moneyball signing is kind of Virgil van Dijk in that, he signed for 75 million. Everyone thought that was crazy. And then after about three games, you were like, Liverpool have ripped Southampton off here. You know, that still to me is a Moneyball signing. So I look at Bournemouth signings, for example, Dominic Solanke, they paid quite a bit for him, around £20 million. But he's an established Premier League striker now who would go for a lot more money than that. Same with Nathan Ake, brought him in from Chelsea. I think, again, around £20 million. Ended up going to Manchester City for a lot more than that. So ended up being worth a lot more than they paid for him. And then sort of under the radar signings as well, in terms of, you know, look at Philip Billing, not a lot of money paid for him, but a great player who's come in and been really established in the Premier League. And probably one I'm kind of surprised there hasn't been sniffing around from bigger clubs actually around him. So I think just smart signings, and as I say, Moneyball signings, which is, you know, as much as people don't like that tag and want Liverpool to get away from that, that's still exactly how they operate, is finding undervalued talents in the market and bringing them into the team. And also being able to identify what you need exactly in the team. And that is a key part of this as well. And Richard Hughes, I think, has shown himself adept at doing that.
And with Michael Edwards coming back as well, of course, he was known for doing those kind of deals for Liverpool. What's the relationship between them going to be like?
Yeah, well, they're described, interestingly, as kind of very different characters to each other in terms of, I think Michael Edwards a little bit more intense, a bit more combative was the word that was used to me, whereas he used a little bit more laid back. And so I think I quite like that idea that they're slightly different and they'll work together quite nicely in that way. Sometimes if you've got a bit of a clash of personalities or different personalities like that, it can work together really nicely. So, and also, I mean, they clearly get on well, don't they? Because they've known each other for years and wanted to stay in touch. So I think that bodes well for their working relationship. And they clearly think about football and how it should be played and also how transfers should work in a very similar way. And I think, you know, if you're singing from the same hymn sheet and you want to do transfers in an intelligent way, which they both do, then I think it's going to be a productive working relationship. Mm.
And of course, there's going to be another person working closely with both of them, a new manager. Who do you think that will be?
Well, my take at the moment is still, you know, I still believe that Alonso is going to be the front runner because, you know, people say, okay, maybe Amorim comes in more into the mix now. But I can't think really for a reason why that would be outside of maybe just sample size. I accept that Alonso's career, they don't have an awful lot to go off. But I do know, you know, with the depth of statistics and analysis they do, they'll have a really good idea of what his Real Sociedad B team was like. They'll know that this isn't a fluke and that he showed real promise there as well. So, you know, I think people see Alonso as the emotional appointment, but you look at the body of work he's done at Leverkusen and he is the outstanding European young manager, isn't he? There's just absolutely no question about it. So, you know, I think he will still be front of the queue, but I've no doubt Amorim will be in the running for what he's done at Sporting, overachieved relative to his budget, which is always what Liverpool look for in a manager. That's the way of measuring the. And Roberto De Zerbi is another interesting one in terms of, obviously, his name gets mentioned a lot and it's not going great for Brighton at the moment. But you know, Hughes is known to be a big admirer of him. Actually wanted to appoint him at Bournemouth before they ended up bringing in Gary O'Neill. So, you know, I think that's a really interesting one that he's tied to Zerbi and really admired him. But obviously, his targets will be different at Bournemouth to Liverpool. There's a better calibre of manager he can get. Same with a better calibre of player, even though, you know, they did used to try for a lot of players Liverpool were going for. I think he can step things up. And I think, you know, he might have tried for De Zerbi at Bournemouth, but maybe you'll think Alonso is the better fit in terms of, you know, well, just look at what his managerial career has been so far. And so I wouldn't read too much into that. But I think De Zerbi will definitely be on the radar at least.
Of course, the club kept the Klopp announcement quiet until, he declared it himself. So how much do we know about this process and how much is the club keeping it a secret?
Yeah, they're very quiet again. I mean, they really do like to operate under the radar. I think that's one of the things they said, didn't they, about FSG really like about Michael Edwards is he keeps his cards close to his chest and doesn't leak things. So, you know, it's difficult to get information out of Liverpool these days. And I think obviously as a journalist, that's not great fun. Everyone's really sort of sticks to being quiet around things. But I think the one thing we can confidently say, and absolutely my sources back this up, is that this is when things step up now in terms of the managerial race. You know, Liverpool have been doing the homework, no doubt about that. All the analytics side of things and that element of it, that's absolutely been going on in the background. But now, in terms of firm approaches to managers' representatives, firm approaches to clubs, we can expect that to start to come further down the line now. I think that is, we're in the period now where that will start to happen, because obviously plans then need to be put in place for next season. And as much as, you know, I think Liverpool are trying to be respectful, say, to Alonso in terms of not approaching him while he's in the middle of a title race, they do know they're going to have to go behind the scenes and go to his agents and speak about that, because you just cannot leave that to the last day of the season to get sorted. Those plans have to start moving and plans have to be in place. They can't leave themselves short like that. So, yeah, I really expect an acceleration in that regard in sort of the coming weeks.
And will Edwards and Hughes play a part in that work, or is someone already doing it?
Well, the analytics stuff and the analysis, that's all going on behind the scenes with sort of Will Spearman and his team. They work with the numbers and looking at who's the best candidate that the numbers suggest. But in terms of pushing ahead with actually making the appointment, approaching the club, that will be in Richard Hughes' hands. He's going to be the one who takes charge of the managerial search. I've no doubt whatsoever Edwards will play a small role in terms of being leaned on for expertise and advice and how things should progress and what can be done. You know, the whole FSG's whole sort of football portfolio is now in his control. So obviously this is as big an appointment as you can get inside of that. And so I've absolutely no doubt his fingerprints will be all over it. But in theory, this is Hughes' baby. This is the one he gets to take up and take charge of. So, you know, it'll be those two working in tandem, but in theory, more sort of Richard Hughes sort of taking the lead on that.
And of course, with Klopp leaving, it's going to be kind of a new structure because he has had so much power the last couple of years. I think he admitted so himself. So we got a question for one of our readers who want to know if Edwards coming back is related to Klopp leaving.
Yeah, I've absolutely no doubt the two things are linked. I mean, you can make too much of the fact that, you know, that Edwards left because he wasn't happy with the power that Klopp was getting. You know, I don't think it was a huge falling out or, you know, there was no fight or anything like that. But it was clear there was a clash going on and that, you know, Jurgen Klopp was getting more power around recruitment. And that obviously, if you're the sporting director, you're just feeling undermined in those situations. So it was clear that those two couldn't kind of work together anymore. But obviously, Edwards has maintained really good relationships with FSG still. So they've had the ability to get to bring him back. But I've no doubt that unless Klopp was leaving, there's no way Edwards would be coming back into that role at the moment because, you know, FSG were willing to give up this power to Klopp for good reason, which was, you know, one thing I would say about that, and I always feel more comfortable if this is the structure that they're going for in terms of sporting director making decisions, like the CEO of football ahead of that. And obviously then the manager and they all work together. I'm more on board with that collaborative approach. But I would say that, you know, in giving Jurgen Klopp power, I doubt they've got many regrets over that because, you look at the results on the pitch, have pretty much sustained. They've still signed very, very good players. Recruitment has been absolutely fine. You know, Endo has been signed in this structure. Alexis McAllister for peanuts relative to his worth. So Liverpool has still been able to make really, really smart signings in this time. So, you know, I'd be wary of sort of saying, oh, well, it was a disaster to move away from Edwards. But equally, I would say I'm more comfortable in the structure. And I think FSG are more comfortable in the structure. And I think they think it's the best way to get, you know, sustained results. They only broke away from that on the basis that they knew they had a genius manager at the helm who could do everything. That's going to change now. You're probably never going to find another Jurgen Klopp. And that's why it's kind of important this summer to get the structure in place and everything that goes with it.
Have they started looking for new players as well for the next season?
Yeah, so again, that's because there's not a manager in place. There hasn't been a sporting director in place till now. That search has only been really preliminary, which is in terms of, you know, maybe identifying who potential targets in certain positions could be. So, you know, a good example and one I've written about is Usman Diamandi at Sporting Lisbon, the centre-half. There's no guarantee that Liverpool will decide he wants a centre-half, by the way. You know, you've got Quanta come through to take Matip's place. You've got Van Dijk if he signs a new contract, which they hope will be the case. Obviously, Konate and Joe Gomez can play there. And of course, you don't need Joe Gomez probably on either side if Conor Bradley is the backup right back. You keep Tsimikas, which he signed to a new contract last summer. So, you know, it's maybe fallen into place for that not to happen, but it would be totally remiss of them not to do the background work and do the data analysis and do the profiling that they do. So that's, you know, when I say that they're interested in Usman Diamandi, that's the kind of thing I mean, is they're looking at, if we need a young centre-half, if we need a young forward, maybe Johan Bakayoko is another one who's on the radar. They're doing that identifying, they're doing that sort of baseline work, and then the rest will come from there. And I think it will have to wait till there's a manager in place, or they've identified a manager, but then that's when the work will start towards, this is what I feel we need. And then they'll start to say, well, this is the list of targets, let's go from there.
But with how things are going this season, do we need any new players, or is the squad good as it is?
I genuinely think it's a fair question to ask. I mean, the new Champions League format, I believe, will add a couple of games. So maybe that's a consideration at some point, whether is that to bring in a young centre-half to pick up an extra few games somewhere, or an extra young forward to sort of ready yourself to prepare yourself for Mohamed Salah eventually leaving or whatever, if you know, whether that's in a year or whether further down the line. You know, that's the decision that has to be made. But I would say, you know, if anyone thinks this, I totally agree with the idea that I don't think this squad needs desperate work. That's absolutely the case. I don't think I'm looking at this huge gaping holes here in the first team that need addressing from a new manager. And again, I think that's part of the reason why it's such an attractive job, really, is that, you know, there's not a lot of work needs doing to the squad. Maybe some tweaks that manager will want, but other than that, they're coming into a really, really strong situation, I would say.
Maybe the biggest job for Hughes will be the contracts. What do you know about the situations for Van Dijk, Salah, Trent?
Yeah, so I think that's going to be sort of really first priority at the moment. You know, as much as the managerial search alongside that as well, I think is the contract situation. I think, you know, I've always said that Trent Alexander-Arnold, I think there's no doubt that if the contract offer is right, he absolutely wants to stay at Liverpool. You know, he wants to be the club captain. It is the club he supports, so he wants to stay. So I don't think that's going to be a difficult one. Van Dijk and Salah are maybe different in that they are decisions to make over their age and how much longer they can play at this level. But I think less so with Van Dijk. I think there will be less concern around that because he's a centre half. The sort of demands on him physically are maybe less. And I also, I just think, although he is quick still, and he probably will be quick for another couple of years, he's not wholly reliant on that. He's brilliant in every other.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Element of defending, and I don't think he's going to completely drag Liverpool's back line, you know, the deeper and deeper with it over the next couple of years or so. So he, again, seems like a bit of a no-brainer, and I think we'll get sorted. I think the trickier one is Mohamed Salah. You know, it seemed obvious, didn't it, last summer that, okay, they'll probably get one more year out of him, then they're going to have to sell him to Saudi. But the way that that project has really soured and doesn't look anywhere near as attractive anymore, I think it's an interesting decision the player's got to make. The problem there is that he's on huge money, and how much can you get in his next contract when you think that there's probably going to be some decline there. This is probably the contract where it does happen, as much as he looks after himself. So that one's all about, can they find that compromise to make it work? Because I don't think he's going to want to go to Saudi yet. I think he's still playing at too high a level to want to go. But it's, as I say, it's that compromise. What Liverpool will help Liverpool is that the Saudi Pro League is not attractive at the moment, and that there's no obvious suitor who's maybe going to come in and pay big money for him at this point and pay him the contract he wants. So I do think that kind of helps strengthen Liverpool's hand, but I think that's the trickiest of the three negotiations, and really sort of interested to see how it goes. I actually wouldn't be that stunned at all if he was out of any of them, was the one who he does another year and then leaves on a free maybe, and Liverpool sort of say that that's all they're willing to do at the moment, but we'll have to see how that one pans out. But I think that's the trickiest one.
We have seen in the past that they're not afraid to let players leave on a free.
So, yeah, because I think a big factor in that is that they pay pretty cheap transfer fees. For example, you know, Mohamed Salah, what was it, around 37 million, something like that. So, you know, obviously given him a lot of wages over the years, but it's not absolutely a must that they need the money coming back into the club in transfer fees to reinvest it. So I think there would be a willingness to do that when it comes to him. And I think that might maybe even be a situation that if he can't get the contract he wants at Liverpool, that will probably end up suiting all parties. So we'll have to see how that one plays out. But as you say, Liverpool are not sort of absolutely tied in. We have to get a fee for this guy. It's not really how they operate. They are, if it suits everyone, they are happy to let them leave on a free from time to time.
Anyone else you could see leaving this summer? I know a few people are unhappy with Gakpo at the moment and think we should upgrade him. And there are a couple of players on out of contract as well, aren't there?
Yeah, so I think Matip and Thiago absolutely expect them to leave. That's my understanding that they will do. It would be a huge shock if they didn't. You know, injuries have sort of done for them really in the end, and a shame, but both brilliant servants. But yeah, in terms of other departures, I mean, tough really, probably not, which again is why I think there's no real sort of big holes in the squad. Is this is a big reason for it really, is that, you know, there's not really anyone you expect to leave. And on Gakpo, I mean, I'm a big defender of his really. I'm kind of surprised by some of the criticism he's got. I mean, he's essentially your fifth choice forward, and he's got 13 goals and 4 assists this season, which is crazy. It's crazy, isn't it? Like, it's really good numbers. And, you know, it's not an absolute guarantee that you can get rid of him and bring in someone who will provide those numbers, because you're probably taking a gamble on someone. You know, he's a top-class international. And people forget as well that, you know, he's been a bit up and down this season, but he's played so many different positions. And you know, you only have to think how good he was when he first came in to... You know, he was electric, really, when he signed, and a big part of Liverpool turning their season around. So, you know, I'm a big fan, and I want to see him get back to playing his best. And that's clearly not happening at the moment, but I hope it will soon, because I think he's a good character, and you know, keeps his head down, plays loads of different positions for the manager, and always works hard as well. So, I think it'll turn for him.
In terms of transfers in the summer, maybe that's going to be him. Lot of focus on young players again. Of course, we've seen some of them play this season. And is that kind of another department of the club doing that work?
Yeah, in terms of signing, say to the academy, yeah. So, yes, it's something they've massively improved lately. I mean, the hand was forced in terms of they had to get better at this once Brexit came in, is recruitment from other English clubs, because, you know, they lost that ability to dip into the European market when players were 16. I'm thinking the types of, you know, the likes of Bajcetic is probably the best example I can think of that, actually, in terms of, and also Ben Doak, even though he's British, he is Scottish, so they wouldn't have been able to do that move other than when they did it. So I think they've got better at that recruitment from within other clubs. So, you know, James McConnell is a good example, came in from Sunderland, I believe, Bobby Clark from Newcastle. They've massively improved that side of things. And I think, you know, you're already starting to see the benefits of that with those players coming through into the first team. And it is an area where they are going to have to keep being strong and fight enough interest from other big clubs in England, because that is, you know, it's a way of getting bargains, isn't it? And Liverpool, what's helpful to them as they look to do that is that they've got a real pathway, and they can show, you know, look what we did with James McConnell, look what we did with Bobby Clark. This could be you. We will tell you what the pathway is. And I think that's massively helpful for them to do it. And I think, as you say, it will be a big part of the transfer business going forward.
And in the short-term future, let's talk about the rest of the season and start with the match on Sunday, which didn't go to plan. How do you think the defeat at Old Trafford will affect the rest of the season?
Yeah, I hope they can compartmentalise it and sort of forget about it. Maybe going away for an international break and focusing on that for a bit will allow people to sort of just get it out of their minds immediately. And I think, look, I'm sure the manager will have made this point to the players as well, that, you know, it's a disappointing defeat. Probably the most heartbreaking defeat you can have is to be winning at Old Trafford in extra time and then losing literally the last seconds. That's as bad as it gets, really. But look, it's just very much a consequence, isn't it, of the fatigue and the amazing things they've done in the build-up to that. Or as far as I'm concerned, it was, you know, they played, what was it, 9 games in 30 days, I believe. Now, Manchester United have played 6 in that time. And they'd also had 2 full week breaks in the build-up to this game. So, you know, that makes a massive difference. And it was clear that Liverpool were out on the feet at the end of that game. If they could have just hung on and scraped through without conceding that late goal in normal time, you know, they would have won the game, and he probably would have said deserved to as well. So it's just one of those things, isn't it? You know, when you've come through that period, 9 games in 30 days, you've won 7 of them, you've drawn 1, and it was with Manchester City, who were the champions, and you've gained a major trophy in that time, and all with having an incredible injury crisis going on. That is a remarkable achievement. So I'm hoping that, you know, look, the FA Cup was probably the lowest priority of the remaining trophies. They missed out on 2 games now that they won't have to contest in that competition. They're getting players back. It's like a fresh start after this international break. Go and win the league and the Europa League. That's the challenge. And I think that, you know, these players have shown themselves adept at sort of shrugging off disappointments very, very quickly. So hopefully can put in a sort of statement performance against Brighton and then go from there.
And in terms of injuries, we're in the international break now. Hopefully get some of the players back. What do you know about that situation?
Yeah, so obviously Gravenberch was back in the squad at Old Trafford, so that's a boost. And Curtis Jones will be back in the squad for Brighton. I think he was kind of touch and go for Old Trafford, really, you know, quite close to having a chance, but he will definitely be back for Brighton. That's the expectation. And then Beyond that, we think the week after that, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Diogo Jota. I think Jota in particular is a huge boost to be that soon. That's sooner than I expected at all. Thought maybe more mid to late April. So he's very soon. And then maybe just Alisson Becker just slightly after that, or maybe sort of similar week. So, you know, picture is really clearing up really in terms of the injuries, which is fantastic news for Liverpool, because you know, this just makes the squad stronger. It makes it easier to win games late on. It makes it easier to rotate through multiple competitions. And it just makes them stronger for this run-in, which is, you know, they've done really, really well to get themselves in this position. To have an almost full squad between now and the end of the season, you know, you put them up with anywhere, any other team they're up against in terms of ability to compete. And so it's really, really exciting that they're getting all these players back at just the right time.
Do you know if there's a reason behind all those injuries? That was one of the questions as well from our readers. Anything in the medical department or training load or something that's behind all those injuries?
Yeah, I think it's very much the style of play that Liverpool play is a huge factor in it. I think if there's one thing that, you know, maybe out of order to say this, but I think is the one thing Liverpool won't miss about Jurgen Klopp, it's maybe this. Because I think that the two things are just intrinsically tied, and it feels like they've had an injury crisis basically every season that Jurgen Klopp's been here. And I think that is absolutely no coincidence that they play the most intense brand of football. You know, you look at City's injuries in comparison, they don't get anywhere near as many. And that is because they spend most of the game just resting on the ball, move. They don't have to press constantly. So I think that's a real issue for Liverpool that they've had under Jurgen Klopp. But equally, would they have been successful regardless if they hadn't played this style of football? Absolutely not. So I'm not saying it's a complete downside, but I do think it's a factor in the injuries. And I think one thing Liverpool will be massively disappointed about that's happened this season is the recurrences they've had. So that's Mohamed Salah with his muscle injury, same with Dominic Szoboszlai, and obviously Trent Alexander-Arnold with his knee. Those are the situations that medical staff really fear. And so you can get really unlucky with those. It's not a criticism. It can just happen from time to time. But that's the one where they'll look back and can we take any learnings from that? Because that's the huge disappointment, is when you bring them back just slightly too early and they get a recurrence.
That could create long-term issues as well, couldn't it, for players if they start to get injury prone?
Well, exactly. I mean, you think about Salah, he never ever gets injured, and then he's got sort of two back to back, or an injury and then a recurrence. And that's, like, you know, quite frightening if you start to build up a succession of injuries, and a player, even as good as, you know, as well as he looks after himself, if he starts to get a succession of injuries at his age, is kind of a big concern. And actually will be part of, I suppose, when they're talking about contract renewals, that will maybe get mentioned that he got one injury in his career. So yeah. It's an interesting one. But yeah, that's, as I say, that'll be the ones that they're most disappointed about, because that's absolutely what you want to avoid.
If we get them all back now the coming weeks and get through the international break, what do you think is the best team going forward, with Trent coming back instead of Conor Bradley and Jota as well? How does Klopp manage that?
Yeah, I mean, I said a comment in a podcast recently, actually. I was asked about, you know, what's Liverpool's back four, and I put Conor Bradley in it. And that's not to say that he's a better player than Trent. I don't believe that for a second. I mean, Trent Alexander-Arnold is literally one of the best passers of the ball in the world football, can do things that no other footballer can do. But I do think going forward there's maybe a case to bring him into midfield in the long term, at least, I think. But what I will say alongside that is that that's probably a decision for the new manager to make. So I think going forward between now and the end of the season, we won't see that. I think Trent will be the starting right back. But I think Conor Bradley's done well enough, and I think Trent wants to play in midfield enough that maybe that's something the new manager will look at. But yeah, in terms of starting 11 going forward, I think, look, I'd start from the back and go forward. I think Alisson, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Konate, Van Dijk, Robertson for me over Joe Gomez, I think, on that side. In midfield, has to be Endo with the way he's played, doesn't it? I think he's just nailed on a starter there. McAllister, absolutely, maybe Liverpool's most important player at the moment. And then on that right side of midfield, probably Dominic Szoboszlai, although I think, you know, he said himself, we still to see the best of him. I think hopefully we can see that in the running after he's got those injuries out of the way. And then in terms of the front line, Mohamed Salah, obviously, on the right-hand side. Darwin Nunez played himself in that centre-forward role, absolutely turned into everything we hoped he would be. And on the left side, then I think when everyone's fit, maybe you're squeezing in Jota. But I think it's going to be horses for courses in terms of that. And very much, maybe in away games where it's difficult and you've got to get the ball up the pitch. I'm thinking, you know, going to Old Trafford, for example, I still think you want your Luis Diaz in there because he protects your fullback so much. But in games where you know you're going to dominate possession, you're going to be camped around the opposition box, then it's Diogo Jota. But the fact is that in terms of having a nailed-on starting 11, I suppose Klopp would probably laugh at that because I think he's going to need everyone, isn't he? And he's going to need, you know, Jota in some games that maybe wouldn't expect, would maybe start up front and maybe Nunes will be moved out to left. Sometimes you're going to get, I've left Curtis Jones out in my midfield, which feels absolutely criminal, actually, when you think about how good he was this season. So, you know, I'm probably completely wrong about, you know, naming that 11 because, you know, absolutely all these players have got huge roles to play.
Maybe not the kids in the last couple of months, though. They've maybe had their minutes of fame.
Yeah, I think the likes of Bobby Clark and maybe sort of sit out the last few months, as you say. But I think, you know, they've still maybe even got a role to play in terms of, you know, if you can bring Bobby Clark on for the last 20 minutes of a game and protect Szoboszlai's legs ahead of a midweek and a weekend game after a midweek, you know, all that is very important. Actually, in fact, you know, when you think about some of these Europa League ties, if Liverpool can get themselves a handy lead and get themselves into a good situation, those second legs are ripe for using some of the young players in terms of, you know, you don't even think of him as a young player anymore, but Jarrell Kwanzaa, similar with Conor Bradley, they will still get plenty of minutes, absolutely, in those competitions because I think the opportunities to use them are going to be there.
Do you think we could get the dream ending for Klopp, especially with the Premier League and maybe Europa League as a bonus?
I really hope so. I hope so. I think, you know, winning that Europa League as it being his final act would be so, so nice. But I think more than anything, you know, even if he lost the Europa League final, I'd love for him to win the Premier League and to be able to lift that trophy in front of all the fans at Anfield, because obviously that was taken away from him last time around. And it was so unfortunate with the season that he put together that year that ended up being lifted behind closed doors. I mean, I was one of the lucky ones who actually was there in the ground in the press box and got to see that. And I feel so privileged, but it was still tinged with so much sadness because I just wished that the fans and the supporters were there to be able to see it. And so I really hope that that's going to happen. And I think, look, with the players coming back from injuries and the position Liverpool are in, and the fact that Manchester City and Arsenal have got to play each other coming up, it really, you know, Liverpool are in a really good position to do it. I really hope they get the perfect ending, that the players can do everything they can to sort of give Jurgen Klopp the send-off he deserves, because he does deserve it. He's been a miracle worker, a genius, and just a great person all round to be around and work with and to follow as a fan. So, yeah, I'm really hoping they can do it.
Are you going to miss Klopp as a journalist?
Absolutely. I mean, I've long said this actually to sort of my colleagues, is that it's not just missing the football he plays and being a Liverpool supporter as I am, you know, missing the fact that the team's going to be very good. It was always that whoever they get in is probably not going to be as good a football manager, and he's also going to be probably less charismatic than he is. And, you know, because there's no one like him, you know, that his ability to give you a brilliant quote, or, you know, to make you laugh, or, you know, to weigh in on really heavy social issues, things that he doesn't necessarily need to speak about, he will talk about. And other managers, you see, they will dodge those questions, but he's intelligent, he's considered. He talks about things that other managers will avoid. And yeah, absolutely. I think from a journalistic point of view, we will miss that. You know, whoever comes in next is probably going to be less open to doing that sort of thing and less gregarious. And that's a real shame. But, you know, you hope that the success can sustain, but you're never going to get another Jurgen Klopp in terms of personality, that's for sure.
That's perfect. I think we've been through the most important topics now. Thank you so much for taking your time. And let's hope for a perfect ending.
Yeah, no problem, mate. It's all, I enjoyed that. And yeah, fingers crossed you can be seeing them lift both these trophies between now and the end of the season.
Thank you so much.
Sound all right. See you later.
The best word I can say, but will describe this, was boom. Ooh, what was this? It was really good.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.